Not sure we have anybody named Lazarus in our times. I've never met anybody. There was a car place called Lazarus Motors on Georgia Street. So I guess they were telling you that the cars were dead and they made them alive and want to sell them for you. But Lazarus was a number three name. They keep track of things like this. The archaeology, inscriptions, and the other ancient books, and they make a list of what names were the most popular, and they were John, Simon, Lazarus. So there are two Lazaruses in the Bible. We've been thinking about the one that died. John chapter 11, Jesus wept, and he went out with his sister to the grave. Lazarus come forth. So that's that one Bible Lazarus in John chapter 11. We come here to Luke chapter 16, where there is a different Lazarus. He is also going to die, and both of them do teach life after death, but in different ways. There is a rich man, and then there is a poor man named Lazarus. We should probably call this a story. The word parable is not used. So maybe Jesus was using an actual event, and he knew what happened after death, and he could give this story, and that these were actually two people who had lived. And Lazarus actually comes from Eliezer. Even that's not real famous, but Aaron had a son named Eliezer, so it was the very first high priest after Aaron. And Eliezer was not around in Moses' time, but he's around in Joshua's time. So a lot of Jewish people like to name their kids Eliezer. My God is my help. And we will find out about this particular Lazarus or Eliezer as we look at Luke chapter 16. And the first section will be verses 19 through 21. Now there was a rich man, and he habitually dressed in purple and fine linen, joyously living in splendor every day. And a poor man named Lazarus, God is my help, was laid at his gate, covered with sores, and longing to be fed with the crumbs which were falling from the rich man's table. Besides, even the dogs were coming and licking his sores. We're picking up the story right here, but it's in the middle of Jesus' sermon. And he had been talking with the Pharisees, who were described a little bit earlier, verse 14, as lovers of money. And if we go back to verse 13, he was talking about you can't worship God and mammon. Mammon was an idol. The Latin is fortuna. We say it in English. You can't worship God and fortune. One can put God first and then be happy when God blesses with money and it's underneath God's authority and lower than he is, but one cannot worship, put first, goal, live for, God and money. And evidently that's what this guy was doing. It says he dressed in purple. They were like purple clothes. The Phoenicians sent out purple clothes all over the place. The Phoenicians had boats, and they went all over the Mediterranean with their boats, and they might have even gotten around Africa way back when. And purple is kind of nasty to me. It comes from a little snail. Yuck. Anyway, they would smash the snail and get purple dye. And they have purple clothes. And even in the Old Testament, purple is for either the king gives it to other people or the king wears it. We have Mordecai, Esther's cousin, and he told him about Haman, the bad, evil Haman, and in Esther chapter 8, Mordecai gets to wear purple. And in Daniel chapter 5, there was a handwriting on the wall, and no one could read it. And the person who could read it, Belshazzar, offered purple. And Daniel said, you can keep your purple. Told him it means you're done for, but they gave him purple clothes anyway. So he had kingly type clothes. He lived in splendor. We know that word, lampos. He was dazzling. He was glittering. We don't know his name. Now, in the Middle Ages, they called him Dives. Not in the Bible, but we get diva in the feminine, so he's like the feminine. He's like a man diva. So he has got glitter and splendor and purple. Now we go to Lazarus. God is my help. Well, in eternity. Didn't have a whole lot of help right now. I mean, God was watching over him, and God would give him help in eternity, and the story will go that way. But here's Lazarus, Eliezer again. It'd be like Ray and Raymond, that kind of thing. Pat and Patrick. Lazarus is Eliezer. It didn't seem like God was helping him very much. Now, God's going to help him a great deal as the story goes on, but one thing in here, though, we see is there's going to be life after death for both, saved and unsaved. Way different kinds, but both will live on for eternity. In Lazarus's case, it's like Romans 8:18, there is suffering first and then glory. God would be his help. So he got laid down by the gates. The tense there was, it was in the past. He was laid, had been laid down. Well, it sounds like not just yesterday. So it seems like the rich man knew he was out there. It wasn't just last night, and he didn't know he was out there. He had been laid down, and he would guess that he already knew about it, and if it's his gates to get out, that he'd probably walked around him. So we have a hard time thinking he didn't know anything about it. It happened in the past. Sometimes when you have poor people that want money, and it happens every week in the community, I have to find out whether they're lying or not. But, you know, the latest one, Steve Hayward and I went out to see. He said he had no foot. Well, he had no foot. So I wasn't lying about he had no foot. And here, with Lazarus, you could tell that he wasn't a kind job. He had sores all over him and couldn't walk. Longing to be fed with food. I'll go ahead and say it. It's really a weird word, longing. It's the word for lust. It's usually used of sexual desire. He was, and I think the translation is okay, probably for the best. He was longing for food. He was really starving. Now, in ancient Israel, they cleaned their plates differently. We clean them with soap and water and towels. They would clean them with unwanted bread. So if you had a plate, so you got your Thanksgiving plate and it's got turkey gravy all over it, you got this bread that's getting old, you scrape it off this way. So when it says Lazarus wants the scraps, he wants what they even use to scrape off the plates with. And I'm glad we don't do this custom. They would throw it on the floor, because they expected the servants to then sweep and clean the floors. Well, I'm glad we're Americans. Scrape the gravy, scrape the vegetables off the plate, throw it on the floor. Somebody will sweep it up, and Lazarus wants that. Now the dog came and licked his sores. That sounds like it's not a very good medical idea, but in their thinking, a dog would be like a pig. We don't think that way either, but to us, it would be like the baby piglets came and licked his sores. He was terminally ill, and that kind of made sense. Looking at him, he can't walk, got sores all over the place and infections. The rich man's terminally ill, too. He just hadn't been diagnosed. Just couldn't tell it yet. So the problem was not that he was rich, but that he worshipped his riches. The problem was that he lived to get more and more. Not that he was just rich, that's not the problem. The problem is you can't serve, worship God and fortune, God and mammon. And he was, like the Pharisees that he's talking to, a lover of money. That's the reason he lived, to worship more and more. Well, they both are alive after death. Now a little more upon what Jesus taught. What happened? Verse 22. Now the poor man died and was carried away by the angels to Abraham's bosom. And the rich man also died and was buried. And Hades, he lifted up his eyes, being in torment, and saw Abraham far away and Lazarus in his bosom. We'll stop for there. Later in the book of Acts, the deacon Stephen will be stoned, and he will look up and he will see Jesus standing at the right hand of God. So that's church age, deacon Stephen. So I would say that at death, it's for everybody. One sees Jesus standing. He's normally co-ruling with his father, but it's almost like he will welcome his family home. Standing up. Maybe there is a staircase. He said he's the staircase to heaven. I think of a palatial staircase. You see some of them in Washington, D.C. See some of them in Russia, where you'd see the throne at the top and winding around, going up in St. Petersburg. But Jesus is like the staircase. He's at the top. Now, Lazarus was taken away by angels. We will say in a moment, it's probably Old Testament, but I don't know why that wouldn't transfer. So Jesus will welcome all believers home, and probably angels will carry their souls up. The rich man had cared nothing about God in his life, didn't worry about being right with God, didn't worry about God's approval, lived for more and more and more. It just says he died and was buried. You might say he died and was buried, period. No reference to angels. He was buried. They both still exist. Well, there's references to eyes and listening and seeing and touch, the tongue. So it seems like after death there's some sort of intermediate body. I mean, he was there. He was thirsty. He went down into Hades. Old Testament is Sheol, New Testament is Hades. They're the same place. They are always referenced as down. Now, we will give some discussion about this in a moment, but it seems like for certain, Hades, Old Testament Sheol, New Testament Hades, is down. And it seems like Lake of Fire is a different place. Because in Revelation chapter 20, those not in the Book of Life, the unsaved people, will be resurrected to stand judgment. And then they will be transferred out of Hades into the lake of fire. So I would say the lake of fire right now is empty. It is prepared for the devil and his angels, and Hades is right now. Unbeliever dies and goes down, still exists. But there aren't any demons down there. And hasn't been judged yet. Later will be judged, and three times in Revelation 20, name is not in the book of life, and three times goes into the eternal lake of fire. So from Luke 16, it's sufficient to note that Hades is not the same place as the future lake of fire. It is the place of unsaved departed awaiting judgment. Hades is right now, and the lake of fire is actually might exist right now, but no one's there. That's following judgment. And Hades, this reference, it doesn't seem like there's any demons. If there are imprisoned in a different place that the Bible elsewhere calls the abyss. So he already was suffering, but the lake of fire is worse. And he already was suffering, but it doesn't seem like there are any demons there in Hades. Do not burn up. The phrase elsewhere, unquenchable fire, that is the word asbestos. So they'll have these sort of bodies that don't burn up. So we can say, well, what church made that? What pastor made that? Jesus said that. Jesus said that. Jesus taught this about Hades. He taught life after death, but we have the saved Lazarus going one direction and the unsaved rich man going a different direction. We'll continue about the conversation. Evidently, they could see and talk, verse 24 through 26. And he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool off my tongue, for I am in agony in this flame. But Abraham said, Child, remember that during your life you received good things, and likewise Lazarus bad things. And now he is being comforted, and you are in agony. Besides all us, between us, there is a great chasm fixed, so that those who wish to come over here from there will not be able, and none may cross over from there to us. Well, no water in Hades, evidently water in paradise. Will we eat in heaven? I actually think so, because it has the water of life and all these fruit trees. You know, another thought, are there animals in heaven? Well, there got to be millions of horses, because when Jesus comes back, all of his army will follow him on white horses. I don't know whether they're stables for the big horses or whether they're like C.S. Lewis when he does his fictional books. He's kind of got like freeze-dried animals in Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, where if you want them around, you can have them around. If you want to put them up, you can put them up. But there does seem to be water and banqueting, and at some point animals in heaven. Here, the most important theological part is there's no crossing over. No crossing over between Hades and paradise. Can't go either direction. King James, remember, a great gulf fixed. I'm using New American Standard, and it has chasm. That is the actual Greek word. There is a great chasm between us. So theologically, we're doing the main things first. There is life after death, saved and unsaved. But unsaved go to Hades, saved go to paradise, and there's no second chance. So we would say sometime in this lifetime, if a person is an unbeliever, there is a final call. Trust in Jesus. Because after the effort and trying, there is no more chance afterwards. They don't go. In fact, they don't cross over, but even he wanted some help. Maybe if we can't move out of here, at least we can get some help. There would be no help. No crossing over and no help. The rich man, therefore, goes to the evangelistic topic. And he did believe in evangelism, verse 27. He said, Then I beg you, Father, that you send him to my father's house. For I have five brothers, and that he may warn them, so that they will not also come to this place of torment. And Abraham said, They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. But he said, no, Father Abraham, if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to him, if they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded if someone rises from the dead, which is probably a reference to Jesus, who will later rise from the dead. Those in Hades want evangelism. We are trying to obey it. Not all Christians do. The rich man thought, well, he can't cross over from one place to the others, but could Lazarus go up and talk with the brothers? And he can't transfer over into the punishment, transfer down there, but could he go back up to the brothers? Actually, the answer is probably yes. It happened a time or two in the Bible. It's just that it doesn't happen very often. We'll make reference later to Samuel coming up. And later, the Transfiguration, we have Moses and Elijah. So, maybe they could, but it's very, very rare. And that is not the way God does evangelism. And I would apply it this way. When we get to Samuel coming up, the witch of Endor is surprised that it worked. In other words, most of the seances were just crooked. They were either the voices of demons or the voice of the witch, and it was just fake. So she was really surprised when someone actually came up. The witches don't bring real people back. In the Bible, it happened a time or two. Samuel, Moses, Elijah, that's kind of all I know of. But that's not God's way of doing evangelism. The rich man objected. No, they will repent if someone rises from the dead. Well, he's given this at the time before Jesus' resurrection. Jesus rose from the dead. So Abraham's answer here is, let them believe, A, the Bible, and let them believe, B, the risen Jesus. So we have that today. You wonder... we have a New Testament. They didn't have a New Testament then. We have Old Testament and New Testament. That is even stronger. And then we have a risen Jesus. And God's attitude is, let them believe the Bible. Let them believe the life of Christ. Let them believe what my son says. I think maybe in the tribulation, in the book of Revelation, there is an angel flying through the sky, giving the eternal gospel in the future tribulation, but not now. It's kind of up to us, and at his trial, Jesus said to Pilate, talk with those that heard me. So talk now with the Bible, learn about the risen Jesus, talk with the people who believe in me, and not sending up the departed to do evangelism. Can it happen? Yeah. Does it happen? No, not really. Just a very few in the Bible. Now, I've done this on purpose, just given the basics. One wonders about, say, the Apostles' Creed now. In the Apostles' Creed, it has that Jesus died and went down into Hades. I actually think that's true. I don't think it ought to be in the statement of faith. I don't think it's clear enough that it should be that everybody has to believe this and put it on the very top thing and put it in the Apostles' Creed. The thought here, and it's very, very old, is that before Jesus' work, hardly anybody was in heaven. Maybe Enoch, maybe Elijah up in a chariot, but basically that before Jesus ascended, that both saved and unsaved went down. That there were two compartments where there's this communication, like in this story, but no transfer from one to the other. That maybe before Jesus' work, Hades had two compartments, one for the saved, one for the unsaved. And that after Jesus' death on the cross, he did go down and talk with them, and he brought them back up, and he essentially took the Old Testament saints all the way back up. That is a very old view. I mean, it's like 100 A.D. I mean, it's a very old view. I think it is true. I'm not sure it ought to be in a doctrinal statement telling everybody they have to believe this. But one thing is about Samuel. In 1 Samuel 28, Samuel had died. King Saul's in trouble. He wants Samuel to come talk with him. He goes to the evil witch. She is surprised because it never had worked before. Witches can't bring up the dead, but God allowed Samuel to come. And it says in 1 Samuel 28:15, "Why have you disturbed me? Why have you brought me up?" So one way of looking at that is Old Testament saints like Samuel went down. There were two compartments before the cross and the ascension, saved and unsaved. And people like Samuel went down because he said, "Why have you brought me up?" Now there are others. They can be interpreted more than one way. And I, on purpose, didn't want to give all the possibilities, but in Matthew 12:40 it says, "As Jonah was in the great fish, so will the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth." Well, we could say heart of the earth means the grave. On the other hand, heart of the earth sounds like middle of the earth. And then we have Ephesians 4:8-9, that when he ascended, he led captivity captive. He took a lot of people with him. In Ephesians 4:9, "He who ascended, he first descended into the lower parts of the earth." So, you know, Samuel, "Why have you brought me up?" Matthew, "For 3 days he'll be in the heart of the earth." Ephesians 4:8-9, "He led the captives out, took them up. He first descended into the lower parts of the earth." Putting it together, it fits. It fits that in the Old Testament times, everybody who died went down. And there was Hades for the rich man. There was paradise for Lazarus. And at first they all went down, and heaven didn't have very many people in it. But after Jesus had the first glorified body, he brought them all up. Very old view, don't have to believe that part. The main thing here, though, and we tried to stress that for the first part of the message, the main thing is Jews believe very much in life after death. He believed in two outcomes, and he believed that people make their decisions now and can't change it later. A person trusts in Jesus in this life, or a person lives for something else who's totally indifferent to Jesus. Afterwards, can't change their mind. Musicians, please come.